Welcome to Eugeria, broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios. Eugeria is a Greek word meaning health of body and mind in aging individuals. Eugeria Radio is a weekly show celebrating the heroes that contribute to the Eugeria of our elderly and disabled population. Now joining us in the studio are your hosts, Sam Grass and Brad Culp.
Good morning. It's December 22nd, 2010, and this is our last show of 2010. We will be off next week, actually replaying one of the best of 2010 for you, so we'll be around next week, just not in person. But I've got Sam Grass and Lee Cantor in the studio with me this morning. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning, Brad.
Anybody have any trouble getting here this morning?
No. Why?
I'll tell you what, I've been caught in mall traffic three or four times in the last couple of days, and I tell you what, I want to go home and stay there until after New Year's.
I'm sure Sam's done his shopping.
Oh, yeah, I'm completely done.
He hasn't done his spending, but the shopping's done.
Yeah. In relationship to the traffic situation, we have a little different format today. We're going to begin here in Atlanta with Jim Ostenson. Jim is an attorney that specializes in issues that deal with the senior population. I'm going to leave it at that, Jim, and allow you to develop that as we get further along. And then later in the broadcast, Kevin Ritz in Dallas, Texas, will be joining us with his guests.
And Kevin's still here with us, but it is a bit of a holiday for Kevin because Kevin is a Boise State alum, and they are going to be playing in a bowl game tonight. So I'm pretty sure that he's going to be knocking off early today. Right, Kevin?
He's not on.
He's on mute, but I'm sure he's right. Shaking his head yes.
He's probably saying, is that permission to leave?
That's right. Okay, well, today in the studios, as I said, is Jim Ostenson. Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Good morning. Doing great.
And as we begin, just for clarity's sake, if I call you Steve, that's okay, too. I know Jim's brother, Steve, very well, and I'll have a tendency to interchange
the
name.
Do they look alike?
They don't look anything alike, but you know me. I'm going to go down that road. So I will make apologies now before it ever happens.
That's all right. I taught Steve to walk.
Good. Did you change diapers?
No.
Oh, okay. Jim, won't you just begin by introducing yourself, a little bit of background, how did you come to Atlanta, and what is it that you do in your practice?
Sure. My background was actually in church work before I went to law school, and as I was involved with families in churches, I saw the disaster that would often happen when a family would lose a loved one who had not done planning for the future. The family would have to go on a scavenger hunt to try to find documents, try to put together financial information, and rather than leaving a legacy of love, the dearly departed had really left a legacy of confusion, sometimes conflict, family division, and I just had a growing interest and burden to help families plan for the future. You know, no one wants to be a burden on their children, and that's something that I certainly don't want to do for my children. But saying that and doing what needs to be done so that you aren't a burden are two different things. So I just had a growing interest in helping people with legal matters, planning for their future, planning for their family's future, and the door opened for me to go to law school out in California at Pepperdine. And then came to Atlanta in 1984. I was the staff attorney for a large nonprofit organization.
I give you permission to name that nonprofit.
Okay, it was Presbyterian Church in America.
Thank you.
And with a background in church work, I was able to help churches stay out of trouble, particularly with the IRS, and deal with corporate matters. But I still had a continuing interest in wills, estate planning, and increasingly with disability planning, because statistics show that most of us are going to live longer than we would have if we'd been in the previous generation. But for most of us, we're going to spend part of those final years unable to properly manage our own affairs. So it's not just a matter of legally planning for what happens at the time of your death, but also planning for that period of time when you're unable to manage affairs, to have things structured legally so that you're not a burden on your family. And it's really been encouraging to see over the years a number of situations where parents took that job seriously, that responsibility of doing their planning, and got things in place so that when the time came and they had Alzheimer's or whatever the situation might have been, they already had anticipated what needed to be done, mm-hmm. and there was a team of family and professionals who swung into action and made sure that their wishes were carried out.
When should that planning start?
Tomorrow. It's never too early, and that's been a problem because I can't tell you the number of situations I've had to deal with where the person always intended to do it, maybe even had a preliminary discussion with an attorney, but never followed through. I'm helping settle an estate right now where the man had not gotten around to signing his revised will. They couldn't find the old will. They finally found a photocopy of it. There were some significant dysfunctional issues in the family, and it's an absolute nightmare trying to get this all put together at this point.
It was a bit of a leading question because, you know, I'm thinking of several people I know that both men and women that got aggressive cancer diagnoses and died, you know, at the age of 41 mm-hmm. or 44 and or heart attacks and you know, people are caught by surprise by things
right.
like that.
And estate planning is often viewed as something that you do a few months before you die. And increasingly, there are situations where people either develop some unanticipated illness, a terminal disease, or they're in an accident. And sometimes it's not just a matter of an accident that's fatal. It might be a disabling accident. And the problem is if you have not prepared and made plans for the future, it ends up being a matter where state law is going to control everything. And so the court gets involved in family business, and I don't know anyone who wants that to happen. It's estimated that 70% of the American public dies without any form of estate plan.
Wow.
And everything doesn't go to the government, but the government, through state law, controls where things go, how they go, at what ages they go. 18-year-old children may receive an unanticipated inheritance and be totally unprepared for what they receive. So it's something that needs to be done tomorrow. Mm. Don't put it off to the future. One of the things I also feel strongly about is the need to have a team that works with you as you do your planning. For those who have a higher net worth, that might be a fairly large team of a CPA, an investment manager, a financial planner, an insurance representative, those sorts of things. For most of us, though, it's a simpler thing. You might have an accountant who does your taxes, or if you have a business, you have an accountant who handles their paperwork. You might have an insurance person or a financial advisor, but it's important that the attorney work with the others on the team so that all the pieces of the puzzle fit together. One of the sad things to me is someone who might have proper legal documents at the time of their death, but they never coordinated things with their other professionals, so all the pieces don't fit together.
What's the net worth you would recommend where you start building a team for this?
If you've got a positive balance as your net worth, you don't necessarily need a whole team of people. Most everybody has an insurance person. They might use TurboTax to do their own taxes, but if they do have an accountant or an investment advisor, those are the folks that they need to work with, and those advisors need to be told, we want you to work in harmony and work in cooperation
right.
with the others.
So I'm kind of thinking of a young family, a family that might be just starting out. They might have young kids, and they're fairly young in their careers. And they're, I know certainly I was in that position when I was young and my kids were young, thinking, well, this is going to be expensive. I can't afford this. Either can you give us some kind of idea of what this ought to cost, or are there alternatives that might be more affordable to people that can't afford it?
Yeah. Something is better than nothing in most cases, and there's always the LegalZoom type approach where you do it yourself. The problem is you're getting no guidance, no counsel. You're just filling in blanks. While it might be legally sufficient, it might not be personally sufficient. I feel very strongly that people are more important than dollars. Mm-hmm. And to adequately deal with those people, and particularly if you had small children, you want to make sure you had somebody guide you through the process of selecting who the most appropriate guardians are. You want to make sure the proper provisions are in your will to provide for those children's education and other things at different stages of life. And filling in the blank typically doesn't really do that. Yes, it is an investment to work with an estate planning attorney and to have things properly done. But you look at your financial priorities. You look at what you spend perhaps with an investment advisor to try to save on income taxes. Here you're planning for what's going to happen when you're permanently gone, not just what your next year's tax return is going to be. So it shouldn't be an exorbitant amount. And I get calls from folks that I refer to as tire kickers, you know, who just want me to tell them right up front what the fee is going to be. And I tell them, you know, if you called a mechanic and ask how much it would cost to fix your car, they're going to have to look under the hood first to see what needs to be done. So my feeling is someone who truly loves their family, who wants to leave a legacy of love, should be willing to invest not only the funds, but the time to see that things are properly done and that periodically they're reviewed and updated.
How often do you recommend that update?
The update, I tell them, should be done when there's a significant change in their situation, where they perhaps received an inheritance or something's happened where they have seen a great increase or perhaps a decrease in their finances. Secondly, whenever they hear there's a significant change in tax law, which just happened this past Friday when the president signed the new tax bill. And thirdly, that they need to, whenever there's been a change in their situation, a divorce, a death, something like that, they should consult with an attorney.
Let's go back to, you know, older people that don't have a plan or that may have a plan that's insufficient. What's the most common error that you see or the most commonly overlooked item that ought to be addressed that may not be addressed?
Something I touched on at the very beginning was planning for death, perhaps having a will or a revocable living trust, but not planning for disability. Or inadequate planning for disability. They may have put one of their adult children on their checking account and think they got it all covered. Well, there are a number of issues that come up with that because a lot of times seniors will put a child on there as a joint owner of the account, not just as an authorized signer. Well, what if that child gets sued for something? That joint account is liable for the adult child's responsibilities. If the senior passes away, that account passes 100% to the adult child who is a joint owner. So there are some just practical things like ownership of assets, having a proper power of attorney. In Georgia, we call the what we used to refer to as living will and durable power of attorney for healthcare have been combined into one document now called an advance directive for healthcare. You don't have to have an attorney guide you through the process of doing that. It's available, as far as I know, in any hospital's admissions office, in a lot of doctor's offices. But the Georgia legislature, although they improved the document, did not do a perfect job. You start off answering questions where you initial what you do not want, and then without warning, it switches over to questions where you initial what you do want. So I see folks fill it out sometimes, but put the exact opposite of what they intended. So planning for disability is just as important as planning for what happens at the time of your death, and a lot of folks haven't addressed that issue.
Why do you think people are hesitant to get this kind of document and get these materials? Like, in common sense, you know, this seems like a no-brainer to do, but you said the vast majority of people don't do this. Why do you think that is?
For several reasons. One is concern about the cost, because maybe they heard a neighbor say, you know, I spent thousands of dollars,
right,
and I'm not prepared to do that. Secondly, is a distaste for the legal system and for attorneys in particular. I did not go into law because I admired most attorneys. I went into the law to help people, and there are a lot of attorneys who are just as motivated as I am to help people plan for their future and their
right.
family's future. But there's, and then thirdly, sometimes they just don't know where to go for help.
Jim, why don't you, let's take a step back, and a guy like me who recognizes, who acknowledges what you say is all true, but hasn't done a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I come to you and say, I want to start the process. Tell our listeners from that point on, what are the steps?
Sure. In fact, on my website, I have a little motto that says, estate planning should be done as thoroughly as necessary, but the process should be as painless as possible. And a lot of folks are afraid this is something that's going to go on forever. The approach that I take for folks when they call me and are interested in going forward is I email or snail mail them a homework assignment. Now, it's not a 20-page questionnaire like some attorneys do. It's usually just four or five questions for them to consider and some basic financial information to get together before our first meeting. I've tried to streamline the process so that it's not a difficult process to go through. At our first meeting, we get acquainted, I gather information that's necessary, and then we just talk through the what-ifs. Typically, if it's a married couple, we talk what will happen at the time of the first spouse's death. Secondly, what will happen when both of you are gone. Thirdly, what if there were a common disaster and there was right. nobody that survived you? At the same time we do wills or living trust, we do the documents that are related to that, a power of attorney, advanced directive for health care. Then I draft the documents. I don't send out drafts ahead of time because I find that most people just are overwhelmed by that feeling they have to read the whole thing right. and understand everything. Instead, we meet about a week after our first meeting where I have the documents drafted. We go through them. For a will or a trust, I have a brief summary, which are kind of like the cliff notes for the document, trying to make everything as user-friendly as possible. The documents are in plain English. There is a table of contents. So it's easy to find your way around. It's all in a binder with tabs for the different things. What I find from most folks, the response that I get at the end is an expression of gratitude because they say, for the first time, I have peace of mind about right. this. So if I sell anything, I probably say I sell peace of mind.
Yeah. And I know, I mean, for me, as I said, the what would happen in a common disaster with myself and my wife, that's what I'm most concerned with. Who would rear my children?
Right.
You know? And it's a very valid question to ask. For me, obviously, it's a family member. But there are certain members within my family that I prefer versus not.
Exactly. And sometimes it goes beyond. I mean, typically we want to find someone in the family, but we have to think of the situation of young children who are in a school, in a community, right. and if they're sent to your brother in Topeka,
right.
that would be just
as disruptive,
traumatic.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, in those kind of situations where both parents die, and you don't have something, now it's in the state's hands? Is that what happens?
The state has the responsibility of appointing who the guardian will be. The probate court would typically consult with family members, with close friends, to hopefully get someone nominated. But what if the family is fractured?
Yeah.
Two sides of the family, they
right.
can't agree. It's up to the court to make that final decision. It's interesting. In all my years of doing hundreds of wills for young couples,
sure.
I've only had one situation where both parents were killed in an accident and there were young children. So it's something that doesn't happen that frequently, but you can't pick up the local newspaper without reading about some terrible accident.
Right.
So
it does
something,
happen.
It
right.
does, and it's the most important decision that parents of young children need to
make. Do you kind of help coach the people in making this decision, or do you just let them know, like, oh, you got to make this decision?
Some people already know. Perhaps I've had some who, with a relative or a friend, had kind of a swap. We'll be your guardians if you'll be our guardians.
Right.
So it's a pre-made decision. But with most folks, we talk through what's really going to be in the children's
right.
best interest.
Right, because like the people could say, oh, we're going to do my brother. And then you bring up, well, your brother lives in, you
Topeka.
Know, right,
yeah.
in another state. You know, that means that they're going to have to move. Oh, you know, they didn't think of it in those terms.
Yeah.
Does that happen?
Oh, yes, it does. And sometimes they'll say, well, we know it should be family. We're not comfortable with the values or priorities of this family, but they're about the only relatives
right,
we can name.
Right, they're king of the hill. So
and we start talking through, no, wait a minute, do you have neighbors? Do you have someone
right.
who has children in the same school that are
they're
friends?
Close with, yeah. right.
So there's a number of factors that need to be considered.
Right.
Jim, obviously, and I think you spoke of this, but I want you to directly speak to it. What you do on a daily basis, what do you find most rewarding with what you do? Is there one thing you can put your hands around, so to speak?
It's probably what I referred to a few minutes ago when someone at the end of the process says, thank you for helping me do this. This has been on my mind for years. I just haven't gotten around to it. You made the process easy and sometimes even enjoyable. That's the most rewarding thing for me, to know I've helped these people do what needed to be done, not just relating to the finances, to the tax law, certainly that needs to be done, but more than anything, dealing with the people that they have in their lives.
One more final question. If for our listeners who might be in a state of affairs like myself, or who might have parents who haven't planned, is there one single piece of advice that you can give them that you think would be most applicable?
Get started. It's something that some people feel they have to do a lot of research, a lot of thinking, and indeed thinking is needed in the process, but get started. Don't move into 2011 without having the process begun.
That's great. For those who might be interested in contacting you, Jim, and who understand the need to get started, as you just suggested, how can they reach you?
Well, two methods. One would be my phone number at the office is 770-392-3311. That's 770-392-3310. Excuse me, it's not the 1-1.
Yeah.
No, that's our voicemail.
Go ahead.
770-392-3310. Okay. Or my website, which is austensonlaw.com. That's O-S, like in Sam, T-E-N-S-O-N-L-A-W.com. And it's got information about me and my practice, and there's also a contact page where they could submit a question or request a contact by phone.
Well, that is great. We certainly appreciate you being our guest today. Great, good information. I know that at some point I need to belly up to the bar and do exactly as you're suggesting. So thanks for being our guest today, Jim.
Certainly. Thanks for being here.
We're going to, as I said, switch over to Dallas, Texas. Joining us in Dallas is Kevin Ritz. Kevin, are you there?
Yes, we are, Sam. Good morning.
How are you?
With me today, I have Katie Sitton, who is the executive director of the Emeritus at Stonebridge, as well as Darla Morford, who is the community relations director for Emeritus at Stonebridge. Thank you for joining us, ladies.
Thank you.
Katie, we'll start with you. If you could just kind of tell us a little bit about your background, how you got to where you are, where you went to school, that sort of thing.
Okay, well, I started out at Austin College, which I got my bachelor's in business from, with no intentions of working in senior living, and quickly found myself in an independent senior living community where I thought was going to be a temporary job, but turned into what I believe will be a lifetime career for me. Absolutely loved it. From there, I went to residential care and assisted living, and I've currently ended up in complete Alzheimer's care facility and love every minute of it.
All right. And Darla, what about you? How did you get to be where you are now?
Well, I started out in sales, and I took a part-time job marketing for an assisted living community, and I really loved it. And I've always had just a passion for helping our seniors. And my parents are older, and I think that's, and I'm far away from them, and so I just was drawn to helping other seniors. I got to Emeritus as quick as I could.
All right. Well, great. And so what are your principal responsibilities as the community relations director?
Sales and marketing, sharing what we can offer, how we can help families, and internally and externally, doing tours and following contacts and leads that we have through our community.
Okay. And Katie, your title, executive director, I assume means you wear a lot of different hats. Kind of for our listeners who don't know exactly what an executive director does, can you kind of walk us through a day in the life of the executive director at Emeritus of Stonebridge?
Well, as the executive director, you're right, I wear a ton of hats. A day in my life could be anywhere from assisting with the hands-on care to our residents to helping families deal with financial issues as well as different benefits that they may qualify for, or helping families and residents and employees get that extra support that they need, whether it's a support group for a family member or physical therapy for a resident, or helping an employee with their benefit information.
Okay. And what kind of separates a memory care community from a standard assisted living or independent living? What's the main difference?
Well, one, with the memory care, there's actually two differences. We are a certified Alzheimer's center. So you can have, in Texas, you can have memory care units that are not certified Alzheimer's. So we are a assisted living memory care with the Alzheimer's certification. So the one of the main things is the training of our staff. Everyone from our laundry assistants all the way up to our executive directors have regular training in Alzheimer's care, which really, I believe, separates us a lot because our building is very, very focused on the specific care for Alzheimer's. Down to the color on our walls and the food on our plates, everything is designed and geared towards bettering the brain health of our residents.
Okay. And you mentioned before family support groups. Do you facilitate those there at the facility, or do you direct them to another group outside? And if so, kind of what are those?
All of the above. We have our memory care director runs a support group monthly for members of our community as well as other members. But then we also are very heavily linked with other support groups. We have a resident whose wife runs a support group for spouses that we direct a lot of spouses to. We also work very well with the Alzheimer's Association and have a full list of support groups in different areas. So when we have family members we have a family member whose daughter is in Minnesota, and we've connected her with a support group in Minnesota. So I very, very strongly encourage our family members who are dealing with this personally to find support groups, and we help them with that.
Excellent. And you mentioned work with the Alzheimer's Association. What are some of the things you do with them outside the scope of your average day?
Well, recently we participated in an Alzheimer's walk at the Dallas Zoo, and we had several members of our community, from family members to, we actually had residents as well as employees and their families participate, and we raised money and awareness in that way.
Okay. You kind of shared a little bit about a story that kind of was a big success story from one of your residents. Can you kind of talk about that story and how that impacted the lives of the residents and their families?
Oh, absolutely. One of the things that we had discussed earlier is we have a resident currently who her family came to us, and she was living in an assisted living center where it was not it wasn't a secure unit. And they were getting phone calls constantly where the bank 3 miles away would call and say, your mom's here and she's trying to close out all her accounts, or she's trying to give this random person, you know, a large amount of money. And she would wind up missing and going places and didn't know where or why, and was doing things that weren't beneficial to her or her family. And they really felt like they were very concerned about her coming into our community and being resistant to the idea. And I mean, the family was just in absolute tears when we talked to them. And we visited with the lady, and she didn't want to leave the apartment she was in. She did not have the desire to lose that control that she felt like she had. But coming into our community and starting to participate in activities, we really thought it would just be a struggle with her. And I mean, almost overnight, she started making friends, and she's very active in all of our activities. And now, where we thought she was going to be an elopement risk and that she would try to escape all the time, she is one of those residents who we introduce to everyone, and she will come out in the front of the building and talk to people, and just absolutely could not love living in our community more. And the stress that has gone from her family as well as her, knowing that she's in a safe environment, and she loves it. I mean, she wants everybody to see her apartment. Just couldn't be happier. So that definitely is one of the stories that explains why we love doing what we do.
Yeah, that's great. And Darla, as the community relations director, going out and meeting these people and bringing them into the community, I assume is extremely rewarding. What would you say is the most rewarding aspect of your job as a community relations director?
Well, I agree with Katie. When you can help a family find make a plan for their loved one, help them sort out what the different options are as far as sometimes what they need is a respite stay where their family they need like a month or just to have the pressure off so they can think clearly and make a long-term plan and find a solution for them. It's great to be able to be a problem solver for them. And, you know, a lot of times they just feel such an overwhelming burden, just the physical care of a person with Alzheimer's, and they're not equipped for it in their home. Just letting them become the family member again instead of the caretaker, have the wife be able to be just the wife and not in the caretaker role for her husband. It's very rewarding.
Yeah, that is a huge burden to be lifted when you're, you know, worrying about somebody eloping and possibly getting injured or worse. And you mentioned, Katie, some of the activities that you do every day with the residents to make them feel comfortable. Can you kind of give us an idea of what those activities are, what they entail, and how they help those residents in that transition?
Absolutely. One of the things, and it kind of goes back to being the Alzheimer's community, we have activity directors in our community 7 days a week, 365 days a year, 8 to 10 hours a day. And our activity program is set up on a group basis where we have large group activities as well as small group activities as well as one-on-one activities. So all of our activities are also designed personally for our residents. So every resident in our building is engaging in activity, no matter what stage of Alzheimer's they're in. We have things from outings that we go on. We have we take groups of residents out to eat, and then we have other residents that we may take out to ride around the lake and look at the birds or to go look at Christmas lights. We also have cooking classes every week that are designed and geared towards our residents. We have exercise classes daily. We have trivia and Scrabble that are all led by residents as well as the activity directors. Of course, music is always huge. We have outside entertainment come in as well as daily. We have different music activities where currently our residents love music. So we encompass that into their daily lives.
Yeah.
Every day.
All right. That's great. If you were to give a piece of advice to a family who has a family member who has Alzheimer's and is starting to exhibit signs of either an elopement risk or a safety hazard to themselves or others, what would that piece of advice be? How would you advise them to move forward?
One of the main things I say to family members all the time is whether they're in our community or they're in a support group is seek help. Don't feel like you have to do this alone, whether it's through in-home care or home health or a community like ours. Don't feel like it is your sole responsibility. A person with Alzheimer's is more work than one person can handle. So I really encourage people to try to remove any guilt that they have or feelings of obligation and seek that outside help. There's a tremendous amount of support and help out there, and I mean, just use it. You know, I mean, it absolutely benefits everyone involved.
Well, great. If our listeners would like to get in touch with you at your community, how would the best method be?
Well, of course, we'd love for you to come by. We're at 9271 White Rock Trail in Dallas, or you're always welcome to call. Our phone number is 214-691-7400, and we also have a virtual tour on the Internet, and it's at www.emeritus.com, and that's E-M-E-R-I-T-U-S.
All right. Well, ladies, I really appreciate your time this morning. You did great. And with that, we will send it back to Atlanta.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kevin, and thank you, ladies, for being here with us this morning. We truly appreciate it. That concludes our show for today. We want to thank our guests and our listeners. And as always, if you have missed this show live, you can tune in on the Internet at www.ugeriaradio.com. We want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And as we always sign off, if the youth of our nation are its greatest asset, then it stands to reason that the seniors are its greatest treasure. Thank you and God bless.
Ujiria Radio is sponsored by Griswold Special Care and broadcast live from the Business Radio X studios.